Listen to the music, folks. Listen to music.
Listen to music or listen to us talk. It's your choice.
You can do a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
And we got intro music like this.
Yeah.
Outro music, the end of each segment.
Mm-hmm.
That you still give me grief about.
Your bumper music in between segments.
Yeah, that's right. So you will listen to music and you listen to us talk.
So sorry, you'll have to listen to that stuff.
And we're talking to Brandon Cobb. Bassmaster Elite, Brandon Cobb, fresh off his fourth place finish.
Yep.
At Lake Eufaula. Gonna talk to us. I don't know how long he's gonna be here. He's said he'd give us a couple segments. We'll see how long it. Brandon and I, we get on here talking and we just talk. And he's such a good, he's a great guest because he enjoys fishing, enjoys talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just ask him a question, man.
He takes it and runs with it.
Yeah. So Brandon Cobb's going to be with us talking about Eufaula. We're going to talk about the northern swing on the Elite Series, and we'll just see how long he has to give us. But yeah, so going to be a good show. News, and this was big news in the marine industry that BRP discontinues Evinrude, the G2s and all that Evinrude was making. There are a lot of guys. Anthony, Brian Thrift. There was a list of like, I want to say 15 or 16 guys that I came up.
Shane LeHue
runs an Evinrude. Just a lot of guys, a lot of big name guys that run Evinrudes, who are not going to have Evinrudes next year. So
it'll
yeah,
be an adjustment. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they are discontinuing production of the Evinrude E-Tech and E-Tech G2 outboard engines. The Wisconsin facility will be repurposed for new projects to pursue our plan to provide consumers with an unparalleled experience on the water. They're blaming, you know, COVID-19 for really impacting their engine production. Okay, we'll give them that because it has impacted a lot of people in a lot of industries. They have signed an agreement with Mercury Marine to support boat packages and continue to supply outboard engines to our boat brands. So it looks like from now on, it could, because Evinrude, our BRP, has a line of aluminum boats and pontoon boats and whatever else. So they're going to have Mercury motors on them now, which is going to be interesting. I really don't want to call any of the guys I know that run Evinrudes and say, hey, what you going to do next year? I don't want to be that guy asking that question. But, yeah, big news in the marine industry. Evinrude E-Tech and E-Tech G2's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those guys been with Evinrude 12, 13, 14 years now. So it's going to be interesting if there's not enough turmoil in the world already. But we do have something of a calendar of events this week.
We do. That's some fun things, too.
Yeah, brought to you by...
Are you saying it or I'm saying it?
Well, hoping you'd pick it up.
Well, you pause sometimes. You lose your mind sometimes, but it's okay. So, it is brought to you by Green Pond Landing and Event Center and Neil Paul.
Visit Anderson?
Yeah.
You had some trouble with that one.
It's been a long day.
It has been a long day already. Yes, it has. Charleston County, if you want to go down there, they're offering some stand-up paddleboard classes.
Oh, boy.
June 23rd to June 26th, Folly Beach County Park. It's a Dawn Patrol adult stand-up paddleboard surf camp, which is pretty cool. So you can, if you're going to be down at the beach in Charleston, might be something you're interested in. They look like a whole lot of work to me, so you can have my spot.
Donate
my spot to anybody who wants to be the adult stand-up surf camp at Folly Beach County Park. Okay. You can find more information at Charleston County Parks on that one. They do a great job with their summer programs, such that it is this year. Go ahead.
We got another coastal thing. I'm losing my train of thought.
Hurry up.
Gracious.
Thing.
South Carolina State Park Service and Coastal Expeditions are working together to provide tours to St. Philip's Island. There will be day trips, They are a boat tour guided 3.5 miles, and you can do a tram ride on the island to the beach trail where you can walk the beach, explore the trail systems, and the tram will bring you back to the boat, or you can hike back when it's departure time. St. Philip's was owned by the Turner family until 2018 when it was sold to
the state of South Carolina.
Yeah, state of South Carolina. So they have started doing that. The schedule for those tours, Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. or 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Adults, $45, and then 12 and under is $25.
I looked up something on St. Philip's Island. It's an undeveloped island off the coast of Beaufort near Hilton Head. Does it say how many acres it is? 4,800 acres. Ted Turner put that up for sale in 2014 for $24 million.
Wow.
And in 2018, he sold it to the state of South Carolina for $4.9. I know there was a lot of lobbying going on, and I know it was a huge sigh of relief when they negotiated that purchase, because that's a cool place. You have to go down there one day.
Something to add to that, yes. They are working at 50% capacity.
Okay.
So they suggest you wear a mask, so if you need to look up those numbers just to make sure you go and you're not disappointed because they're filled up.
Okay. And where do they go for more information on that? Is that South Carolina State Parks?
Yes. Yes.
No, it's through Coastal Expeditions.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, through Coastal Expeditions. And there's no bridge to St. Philip's, nor does the island have water or electricity.
Wow.
Pretty cool. Two homes, a caretaker's cottage, and Turner's four-bedroom, four-bathroom vacation residence, which looks like a just an average, ordinary beach house.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really, which is really cool. So anyway, that's one of those jewels of South Carolina, I guess you'd say. Anglers, you red snapper fishermen, you got the got shortchanged again this year. You're going to have 4 days. NOAA Fisheries has announced a four-day recreational season for 2020. Expectations in March were that the federal agency in charge of the nation's fishery would disallow any recreational red snapper season. The move to a four-day season is hardly a victory for anglers who have seen their access to the fishery severely curtailed for the past decade, even as red snapper populations expand or explode, according to some fishermen who are out there catching them every day, trying to get snapper and grouper and all that, having to fight their way through the red snapper to get to what they can keep. So, let's see. 4 days. You ready for this? July 10th, 11th, and 12th, and July 17th. That is your 4 day. It's a 3 day weekend and then a single day. And this is one of those things. We did do a segment last fall, I believe, on a passage of a bill that was going to require NOAA to have more recreational input. So while this is not the cure-all that everybody was looking for the first year around, there are some. It's coming around. Just hang in there. What you got? Something else? We got about a minute left. Segment.
The NEGA Cat Daddy Tournament Series. This is their season one. So their first tournament, Saturday, June 27th, from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. at Gum Branch Mega Ramp, Hartwell, Georgia. That'll be fun.
Catfish tournament.
Gotta love catfish.
Gotta love catfish. And if you're into hiking, then you need to get down to the Watery Passage, because they've just cut the grass and they put fresh lumber on the bridge.
Wow, but it smells good.
But it smells good. That's what it says. Can you smell the fresh lumber and newly mowed grass? You're very good. anyway, yeah, a few things for you to do to get out there. And there's not a whole lot scheduled right now. Gosh, it's
it'll come back.
Pretty depressing. It'll be back. Mm-hmm. Wait till you hear what's all been canceled 4th of July, though.
Boy.
All right, y'all hang on. We'll be right back with more Woods and Water South Carolina and Bassmaster Elite Series angler Brandon Cobb.
Really? Is that necessary?
I love that one.
Is it necessary?
Yeah, it's necessary.
Is it actually?
It is, because it's my show. So it's necessary.
Well, I'm the co-host. I should have some say.
You don't have any say.
I have some say.
What did you think about that, Brown? What did that sound like to you?
I mean, I don't really know. It sounded like somebody screaming.
Please tell me it didn't sound like me screaming. That's what Andy Montgomery thought.
I don't think it sounded like you, but it definitely sounded like some strange screaming to start the show.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is.
I don't think it's necessary. I really don't.
I am going to turn the bumper music over to you
one
day.
I think you're terrifying enough,
Dad. You just don't. You don't do it.
I don't do.
Okay, we'll save that for later. Okay. Anyway, we need to welcome Brandon Cobb, Bassmaster Elite, fresh off a fifth place finish at Eufaula, Alabama, to the show. Thanks for taking time and being back on the show, man.
Thank you for having me on. Fourth place, though. You called
fourth place. That's right.
I worked hard for that one more place.
Yeah. Well, when it ended, I think they had you in fifth, didn't they? Maybe four.
I don't know. I was in fifth going into the final day, and then had a decent day.
Okay.
But I think I moved up fourth.
Yeah, I did have that written down right. Yeah, fourth at Eufaula. I just said it wrong. So anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to cheat you out of a finish and a couple thousand dollars. Sorry about that. Fourth place. I mean, we were talking earlier. You said it was hot.
It was very hot. Yeah, it was. And it was storming very bad all week. It was. It was kind of a practice was weird because it'd be 100 degrees or 90 degrees, and then it would be pouring rain sideways and the wind blowing 40 for 30 minutes, and then it'd be 100 degrees again.
and 120% humidity.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty – practice was pretty rough at times. The tournament was a little bit better weather. We had a few storms, but nothing to the extent of practice.
You know, I picked you for my fantasy fishing team because I thought you'd go down there and fish shallow.
Yeah, that is actually a really good shallow lake, but I kind of decided to that one. A lot more people called them shallow than I thought. Yes, it was still one deep, but I kind of, going into that tournament, because I've been there before in the past one time, and I kind of figured what you would see was like 9 of the top 10 deep, and then whoever won the shallow derby, per se, out of all the guys fishing shallow, would probably, the winner of that would make the top 10. But realistically, quite a few of the top 10 were catch 'em shallow or at least mixing in shallow.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there weren't many people in that top 10 that were doing just one.
No, it was. And I devoted my entire time to offshore. But normally, I think you would have seen an entire top 10 predominantly deep. But the lake was a little dirtier than it is often or than the other time I saw it. And the water was high. And that always makes some fish go up shallow when we got high water, and some mayflies were starting to hatch, and there was bluegill beds, just kind of a lot of things going on to keep a few up there on the bank.
Well, what? Go ahead. You ask him your question.
Oh, I thought you were going next.
No, huh?
Okay, so how does it feel to be on Bass Live?
It's pretty cool. So Bass Live, you kind of got to forget about it. Are you fish weird?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they'll tell me sometimes, they'll say, hey, we're going live. And I actually don't like going on live. I don't like knowing that I like being on live, but I don't like knowing that I'm on live. Because what happens is when you know you're on live, like, I don't really do anything too weird or stupid throughout the day, so I don't really worry about that. But when I know I'm on live, I feel like I got to catch one right now. Like, right
you
now, f- I got to catch one.
You feel like you're weird and stupid.
I mean, like, did I say something weird when I don't know I'm on live?
Do you find yourself for the 15 minutes after live going back and trying to remember what did I say?
Yeah, I have done that before, but I'm usually pretty good. I don't say too much weird stuff. But when you know you're on live, like, you feel like you have to catch one at that moment. And then a lot of times, too, you'll be fishing somewhere like, I really want to go somewhere else, but I just went live. I don't want to sit down and run the boat 15 minutes around the lake and lose my live coverage. So it's kind of weird knowing when you're on live because it makes you act a little different.
Huh.
Well, being up there in the standings really puts you on live a lot. Not only live, a live mix.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they, obviously, I don't know exactly how much live coverage I got, but I do know he told me I was live quite a bit.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. How was it having Neil as your marshal?
That was a blast. I felt like that was like the conflict of interest there. It was weird to get Neil in my boat. But I had a good time. I'm glad he got to ride with me. And we actually, I caught the heck out of fish that day, and we got in one place, and I think I caught one like every cast for an hour. So it was pretty cool. I think he had a good time. It was never got boring throughout the day, and we had a good time. We fished together a couple of times, but it was fun.
Yeah.
During the tournament situation.
I talked to him earlier this week, and he said he was, before he forgot, he had to place a tackle warehouse order. So.
Oh, yeah. I think he was getting all kind of stuff. He was taking pictures of worm bags and lure bags. Like, well, what is that you're using?
Oh, man. Let's see. What was I going to say? It just came and left me. Oh, I know what I was going to say. One time when I had you on live, Ronnie Moore, you were talking and you said, hey, wait one, and you set the hook on a fish, and I don't know if you caught that one or missed it, but I think you might have caught it, and Ronnie was in the studio and they were watching you, you know, hang on just a second, let me, you know, I got one on, and you know, and Ronnie, after the segment was over, Ronnie said, he said, you know, Brandon's just got incredible hand, eye, and speech coordination. Because he can talk to us, he feels the fish, he sets the hook, he reels it in, he's all the time, he's talking to us. He said, I get that because I play Call of Duty with him a little bit.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh gosh, here we go again.
Yep, me and Ronnie play often. I think we've got a heck of a Bassmaster Elite Series Call of Duty team. I think, let's see, I play with Ronnie Moore, Chris Johnston, David Mullins, Shane LeHue. So we've got a really good team going there.
Y'all need to video that one day and post it on Instagram.
We do need to.
That you don't know, you have no clue how many views that would get.
we play every day we're home, but yeah. We play pretty often when it's done.
Gosh. Well, you said something about Shane. Now Shane had an interesting, his last day was kind of interesting.
Yeah, Shane can't count. We were talking about Taylor can't read earlier.
Shane, riding around with six fish in a live well, that's not a good thing.
Just to kind of give everybody a story, so how that happened, because I'm sure people are like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Well, he got on one place that was a school of fish, and it's actually easy to do, where he was catching one every cast.
Okay.
And he was culling like ounces at a time, and he caught one, went back there, put the fish in the live well to cull, and then he was catching them every cast. And I'm sure he went to get his balance beam or something, and
yeah,
then forgot that he had just put that one in there and was catching them and culling every cast. And then he got to a spot like an hour later to check, make sure they were still alive, and said, open the live well. And he's like, yep, these three are good. Open the other side, said, uh-oh.
Oh, no.
it's surprisingly easy to do in that situation when you're catching one every cast. So and that was the obvious, the 2-pound penalty, and he self-reported himself, called Tripp, let him know, and threw the smallest one back and took the 2-pound penalty. So it's an easy thing to do, but it was a really costly mistake at that tournament because it made him miss the cut.
And he had that would have been a big day for him. I mean, a really big day.
It would, yeah. I think he actually had 25-5 that day and had a 2-pound penalty, which took him to 23-5, and then had a fish that didn't make it. So that dropped him 4 more ounces to 23-1.
Oh, man. Wait, that will be good. We'll have to give him some – we'll have to make up some flashcards or something like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. When you run out of flashcards now, you can't put any more in.
I actually went and got him a 6-pack of beer at the gas station and took him an out.
Oh, my goodness. That was funny. That was funny.
But he's laughing about it now, but at the time he was not very happy.
No, I'm sure he wasn't very happy at
imagine.
All. I can
imagine. So, looking back at you, Fala, again, I mean, great finish. Nothing to be salty about, but is there anything that you didn't do on Eufaula that you wish you would have done?
No, well, really no, because I mean, obviously more people call them off the bank than I anticipated, but I've spent my entire time offshore practicing, and I don't think I could have found all of what I found without spending the entire 3 days out there.
Okay.
So it's kind of one of those things. It was, yeah, I may could have found some fish on the bank, but that 1 hour practice I spent on the bank could have been that one extra brush pile I found that was a staple one throughout the week. So I don't know. I don't really regret anything. And honestly, I knew I didn't have – well, I had plenty of places, but I kind of had too many places scattered out, and it was hard to do a run through everything.
Okay.
So I kind of just had to really lean on a section of the lake one day or an area, and then lean on the next another day. So it was – I kind of – I'm with what I had working with there, what I knew I'd found, I think it was a pretty good finish. I was pretty happy with it.
Good. Have you gotten everything clean and straightened up and kind of to a point where you feel comfortable waiting until mid-July to touch it again?
Oh, yeah, I did today. I got everything. I haven't touched the boat, but I'll probably go fishing on Lake Greenwood, which they get deep at Lake Greenwood, real similar to Eufaula, actually, and it's kind of where that style of fishing I've got familiar with. So I've got all my deep stuff still tied on, and the grass still, Lawrence is still set up, ready to go. So I'm going to head out there probably here in the next few days and try to catch some. Mossy Oak's coming here next week to do some filming, so we're going to try to catch some bass on the Greenwood.
Nice. Those Mossy Oak guys, they're the ones that took you to Mexico.
That's exactly right. Yep, we filmed a Fish Wars show down there. It's actually on the Mossy Oak Go app. If you haven't seen it, you download the free app, and you can watch it. Watch us catch them at El Salto.
Nice. And oh, by the way, they did use one of those pictures on something that they did on you. It was one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was one from SRS. They used it. It was a good picture.
Nice. Yeah, that place is unbelievable.
Yeah.
There's two unbelievable places I fished in my life. One is there at SRS, and one is at El Salto.
I never forget Davey Hite saying, "Where did you take Cobb?" Because he called me on his way home and said, "I got to talk to somebody that will believe me." Oh, man.
That place is pretty crazy.
It is. Well, we're gonna wrap up this segment here in just a second and go to our next one. Man, a great finish. Fourth place. There I go again. Fourth place. 43rd St. John, 13th in angle of the year. We're going to talk a little bit about the Northern Swing. And then I want you to come back and talk about brush piles, because I think it's something that maybe a lot of people don't know exactly how to handle.
Sounds good. I've got some experience there.
Including us, right, Taylor?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's kind of hard to run brush piles if you don't have any electronics on the boat.
Just a little bit.
All right, hang on, y'all. We're going to be back with Brandon Cobb, Bassmaster Elite, after the break. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I have to ask this question. You know what's coming, right, Taylor?
I do know what's coming. Does he know what's coming?
No, he doesn't know what's coming.
Oh,
back with Brandon Cobb, Bassmaster Elite. All right, Brandon, was that Hootie and the Blowfish or Darius Rucker?
Dude, I don't listen to music.
That's a first. We have a first, Taylor.
Well, okay, I gotta say though, it's a lot better than agreeing with him.
Honest, I wasn't really listening.
Oh, see,
but I wouldn't have known probably either way, because
it's Darius Rucker.
Darius Rucker, yeah.
Thank you.
Oh,
that's a point one for Taylor today.
But I don't listen to music. I'm not a music guy.
Well, what do you listen to when you're driving? When you drive,
talk on the phone.
You talk on the phone. Hey, he's honest, Taylor.
Oh, I know.
It doesn't matter if he's on Bass Live or he's talking to us. He's honest.
Mm-hmm.
That's the great thing about Brandon Cobb.
It is.
He's just Brandon. He's just going to tell you the way it is. And that's what makes you so much fun. I know you've heard this, but anybody you talk to, when your name comes up, dude, that guy is so talented. It's not even funny, and he's just Brandon. He's just, you know, what you see is what you get, and he's a great guy. We all love him. So, just so you ever wondered what everybody else thinks about you.
Well, I appreciate it.
That got really soppy really fast.
It did not.
It did. That was like emotional. That got deep, Dad.
Do you call that deep?
Yeah.
Gosh.
I do call it deep.
We got some work doing you. All right. So we don't want to get too technical here, because we're not technical fishermen. You know, we like to go out and fish for 6 hours, catch three fish, and we're happy. When you talk about catching one right after another, Taylor, I have no idea what that's like. Well, I do. I do know it's like because of that. But on any given lake, I could – no, that's never happened. I'm waiting for it to happen one of these days. Maybe when we get electronics and we know where brush piles are, we can do that. But brush piles, okay, you follow everybody deep was fishing brush piles, including you. Mm-hmm. Do we have places like that here? Are there lakes in South Carolina that have brush piles like that you can run?
Yes, absolutely. But you follow, actually, they were a little shallower than most of our brush piles, per se, around here are.
Okay.
The one thing to keep in mind around here is you got to know, like, what the fish eat in those lakes. So, like, let's talk, like, Lake Greenwood, for instance, doesn't have any herring in it.
Okay.
So they do get on brush piles in that 15 to 22 foot, which is a little deeper than we're fishing at Eufaula, but it's still same brush piles, 15 to 22.
Okay.
But the fish kind of get on the bottom around the brush piles. You catch them on, like, a worm, crankbait, something like that. But somewhere like, let's say, Hartwell, the fish predominantly eat herring. Okay. So they still get on brush piles, cane piles and brush piles, which are same thing, just different material, you know, that they get that same 15 to 22 probably, but the fish actually suspend on top of the brush and you throw topwater over them.
Huh.
Because the fish are looking for herring swim. Herring tend to stay on the top.
Okay.
And the fish, you'll catch some on a worm every crankbait every now and then, but a lot of the fish are looking up. But somewhere like Greenwood or a lake with no, like, no herring in it, then they feed more on the bottom.
So when you got a herring lake and you're throwing a crankbait, you're below the fish for the
a
most
lot of
part.
Time, yeah.
Okay.
Other than like low light conditions, maybe like
okay.
mornings, nights, afternoons, then some fish will get on the bottom, like a typical brush pile fishery. But most of the time we're talking Murray, Clarks Hill, Hartwell, Lanier, anywhere with herring in it, the fish, they look up. That's what I say. So you just throw a fluke, topwater, something like that across the brush rather than through the brush.
When guys are on, I mean, you notice this on live and are there, you know, they're on a point and they got brush piles out there and they talk about changing the angle. Mm-hmm. Is it that? I mean, is the window of catching a fish that tight?
In my opinion, no.
Okay.
When I fish a brush pile, I don't necessarily worry about the angle as far as getting the fish to bite, but there's two things you have to keep in mind when you pull up on them. And that's number one is you don't want to, like, you imagine an oak tree limb laying on the bottom. You don't want to be dragging into the V's of the limb because you're going to get hung. And
okay.
if you hook a fish, he's going to get hung.
Okay.
So you want to, I mean, it's something you can tell on graphs normally which way it lays, but a lot of times it just takes some trial and error fishing it. If you feel like you're getting hung every way from one angle, you switch to another angle.
Okay.
But then outside of that, what I always do, brush piles are small, you know, I mean, we're talking the size of the front deck of a boat, size of the bed of a truck, something like that. I mean, it's
okay.
a small thing you're trying to hit in 10 to 25 foot of water.
Okay.
So to line up on them, when you line up with your GPS, which is generally what you're doing, I always face into the wind. So
easier to hold the boat.
It's easier. You can hold the boat. You can keep your line. And what you do, you got your little boat symbol on your Lowrance, you know.
Right.
I always point the boat. It sucks if you got somebody fishing in the back because they have a hard time casting. But I always point the boat, the nose of the boat, that's your arrow on your graph. I point it directly at my brush pile waypoint.
Okay.
So you know when you're fishing it, you're throwing dead over the trolling motor straight the way the boat's pointing, and that's the easiest way to hit them.
And the guy,
and if you're with the wind, if you're fishing sideways with the wind or with the wind, if you're sideways, you drift by it too fast, and you're having to throw at an angle, and you don't know if you're hitting it. And
okay.
if you're going with the wind, you probably only get one cast before you drifted past it.
And the guy in the back of the boat's fishing a desert somewhere.
Yeah, the guy in the back's going to have a tough time fishing brush piles, but if it's your buddy and it's not a tournament, just get him to come up there with you and throw
okay.
over the front.
Okay.
So, talking about brush piles, what's the difference between a brush pile and a cane pile?
So cane piles are pretty much like around here specific, I guess you'd say, like Savannah River, Heron type lakes. A cane pile is made out of bamboo, and what it is, it's usually bamboo, and it's just a very, very tall brush pile, and that's why they put the bamboo out, because it's easy to get to stand up.
Okay.
And you could put in 22, 25 foot of water and have it 6 or 8 foot below the surface. because it's so tall. And that's really good for those herring fish, like we were talking about. They look up. They
right.
like to sit in, on the top of it. Usually a brush pile, like a greenwood brush pile. That's one of the main lakes around here. For Wiley, Greenwood, that's some okay. of the main lakes for brush pile fishing. And that's usually hardwoods, sweet gums, some type of just regular like bush or regular tree. Most people use hardwoods just because it takes very little weight to sink them.
Okay.
And those are actually, they're not usually as tall. I mean, like a typical brush pile, you're probably talking it's in 18 foot of water. And it might not come 4 or 5 foot off the bottom.
Okay. Okay.
And a cane pile is tall. You know, it's standing, it's bamboo standing straight up. But in general, you're not going to see a bunch of cane piles in lakes that do not have hair.
Okay.
They usually don't work that well in lakes that don't have hair.
Which is why when people talk about fishing Lake Murray, they mm-hmm. talk about fishing cane piles.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
And Murray actually has some typical oak type piles too, which can be good at certain times.
Okay.
But it's got predominantly it's cane piles.
Okay.
And you can on lakes with what a lot of people don't realize. You're talking Murray. You're thinking cane piles, fish sitting on top of them.
Right.
If you go to like up a river in the creeks, there's not a big population of herring.
Right.
So you can actually do your typical brush pile fishing on Lake Murray, where the fish are on the bottom and you fish a worm and things. If you get away from the main lake where most of the population of herring live.
Taking notes, right? Oh, yeah, we can go back and listen to this.
We can.
Okay.
Good. We can do
that. I didn't write any of that down, so it's good stuff. Cool. Okay, now, you follow. I understand you were using a new Zoom worm.
I was, yep, the Mag U-tail.
A Mag U-tail. So that would be
yep.
the old U-tail that's about, the body's yep. about 3 inches long on steroids then.
Yep, just a plain old U-tail. It's just a little thicker, a little bit longer. I think the typical U-tail is 7 inches. This one's 7.5, so it's not that much longer.
Huh.
But it's a good bit thicker.
Okay.
And typically out deep, when I throw a big shaky head, like a half ounce shaky head on brush, deep places, I throw a mag trick worm. But the problem with the mag trick worm, they bite it really good. It's a good cast and bait, works really good, but they're thick. And when you're talking
yes.
a 30-yard cast and you're talking 15 to 25 foot deep, it's a lot of rubber to hook a fish through. So I like that new U-tail because it's a little bit thinner worm, and
okay.
they're still biting it, obviously, and you don't have as much plastic to hook the fish through.
Hmm.
Yeah, huh. Gonna have to make a call to...
Yeah, I was about to say.
It'll be out at the end of the month.
Okay. Okay. I was looking. It's on the Zoom webpage. The new, but it has. I looked at Tackle Warehouse. It's not there yet, so
yeah,
have to wait just a little while.
Be very soon. Yeah, I think I was using Redbug. Generally, if I fish deep, like any lake, I'm not talking about Eufaula, Greenwood. I'm talking about any lake. If I'm throwing a worm out deep, I throw a Redbug pretty much all the time.
We need to delve into that further. You got time to hang around for part of another segment?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I kind of love guests that
like
just
that
keep coming back for more punishment,
yeah, I know,
don't you?
Right?
All right. Well, let's come back to that because I'd like to know why you throw a red bug. And then,
okay.
you know, I think we missed talking about the northern swing, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We can catch that, too.
We can catch that, too. So, y'all hang on. We're going to be back with more Brandon Cobb and more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break. Y'all hang in there.
You find the key to paradise.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Brandon Cobb has been kind enough to take our phone call again, Taylor. And
we must be doing something right. He's back on here a second time.
Yeah, well.
Well, second time, third time.
The more like eighth or ninth, tenth time.
Only in this year,
over the
though.
Years. Oh, yeah, this year, like third time this year. You ended the last segment with most times you fish, you're going to fish deep, you're going to use Redbug. Any reason?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anything... Is that just experience, or is that just what I'm going to throw?
It's experience, but, I mean, it's what I've always used. I think, in my opinion, just when you're talking 15-plus foot deep, you're talking low light, you know, and I think that red bug color just shows up better to these fish at that depth. I've always had more success with it doing that. I mean, really no way to know. I mean, it's not like they're eating red bug leeches down there or anything. So I don't really know why they eat it exactly, but it's just a color that's all around the country. I mean, it's not just me, just all around the country. Red bug is a staple out there and out in deep water offshore fishing.
Well, you know, I got to ask this question because a couple of years ago we were down on Clark's Hill and, you know, I think we caught a few fish. No, that was a rough day. I remember that because we got out there and about 3 hours into it, you were like, boy, I wish we were somewhere we'd catch 2 pound spots all day long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went out and started Carolina rigging and you're like, I hate Carolina rigging. I can never hook up. And you missed like 3 or 4 fish. What's changed? Because, I mean.
Well, I don't Carolina rig, ever.
Well, that was a Texas rig. I guess you were Texas rigging down there?
I honestly don't remember.
Yeah.
When I fish deep, I generally, we were talking deep fishing, brush piles and things. So
yeah.
Deep, I like to throw a big shaky head over anything because the hookup ratio is probably the best. But a big shaky head can be a pain in the butt in brush. It wants to get hung.
Right.
So
right.
In brush, I'll go with a Texas rig.
Okay.
And when I fish, most people when they fish a Texas rig, they always peg their weight. But when I fish brush, I never peg the weight. I think you get a better hookup ratio.
Okay.
Without a pegged weight, and because it allows the weight to slide away from the fish when he picks the worm up. And that's generally my setup for like brush piles and deep fishing. And a shaky head's the go-to, but if you're getting hung in brush, I go with a Texas rig and no pegged weight.
Are you fishing fluorocarbon braid?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll pretty much always use it. With the shaky head and a Texas rig, I use anywhere from 14 to 20. I mean, sometimes I'll go up to 20 if I know it's really gnarly brush.
Okay.
But 14, 16 is usually go-to. 16 is probably, that's what I was using last week at Eufaula. But I'll go up to 20 every now and then if I feel like the fish are really tight. I don't break them off in brush.
Yeah, because you weren't missing many fish when I was watching you, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't think I hardly missed. The first day, we were actually talking about the positioning on brush. The first day, the wind was blowing opposite of the current, so I had to fish the brush piles opposite the way I wanted to. Like I was fishing them down current because of the wind, and I broke off 3 because they ate my bait on the opposite side of the brush of me.
Oh.
that was the only ones I lost. But, yeah, they usually 14 to 20 pound test fishing brush piles in the offshore.
Cool.
So kind of off southern fishing and fun fishing, y'all have got a northern sling coming up for the elites. How do you feel about that?
We do. I've had like mixed success up north. It's one of those things where it's just really hard to figure out up north if you're doing the right thing because the fish bite pretty well like everywhere.
Okay.
And if you're catching smallmouth, I mean, the difference between a limit of 3.5 pounders versus a limit of 3 3/4 pounders could be 20 places. So it's really hard after practice. You're like, well, I caught 40 today. Most of them were 3.5. Is that the right thing to be doing or was it not? So that's the issue I always run into up north. It's not really the catching fish problem.
Right.
It's the figuring out what's 4 ounces per fish better than what's not. That's what makes it kind of tricky to me.
Oh, tell us how do you get 4 ounces per fish more? I mean, is that just a different location? Is that just a different school of fish,
I mean,
or what?
A lot of times you find like areas up there, like it's hard to explain, but it's real comparable to Florida fishing. You'll just find like sometimes like St. Lawrence, you're fishing basically big, vast flats where the current comes over with some rock scattered around it and you drift them.
Okay.
Because the current's really strong. And you might find one flat that's got all 3.5 pounders, but then you might find one 2 miles down the river that's got all 4s and 5s. So it's kind of, you do the same thing in a lot of places and catch fish everywhere. You just have to make sure you realize when you found one of those special places, which is kind of tricky to do. Like last year, we were there and I had a terrible first day and a really good second day, and obviously I already knew where all those places were. I just picked the wrong areas the first day that I thought were good, and they weren't as good as the ones I fished second day. And same thing at St. Clair last year. I ran all the way to one area where I had caught some little bit better fish in practice, but then basically the entire top 10 were dead on top of the waypoints from the other area I'd found. I was torn between the two to go to. So it's just really hard to know what you found up there because the fish, it's a little easier in the south because it's like, well, we didn't catch any there, so that's right. Not a good place.
Right.
Here I caught four, so it's better.
Okay.
So it's okay. A little different up
yeah.
there.
Now, is it all smallmouths, or is there a mix of places you can go catch some largemouth too?
Yeah, pretty much every lake up there got a healthy population of largemouth. There's just certain lakes where if you're fishing for largemouth, you're just flat out not going to win.
Okay.
And that's like St. Clair's an example of that. You can go catch 15 to 17 pounds of largemouth with your eyes closed. Like you can just pick a bank and go catch them all day. But you're talking to win, or even top 10, you're talking 20 to 25 pounds of smallmouth.
Gotcha.
So that's the difference. But there's lakes you can do. I mean, it's like Champlain, for instance, there's always four or five in the top 10 that fish straight largemouth. So it's you just kind of got to know the lake, know the history of it. Certain lakes up there, you definitely don't want to fish for them. And then some lakes you can kind of mix it up or even go primarily largemouth.
Well, after, 6 weeks of being up there, I'm sure you'll get to know those lakes very well.
I will, yeah. It's pretty cool, though. I mean, we do have a lot of tournaments up north, but they're very diverse. I mean, Cayuga is pretty much 100% largemouth. I mean, you can catch a few smallmouth, but it's not primarily in the Champlain. You're talking mixed bags. St. Clair, you're talking all smallmouth. St. Lawrence River has actually got some largemouth. You could make the cut off largemouth probably there, but it's going to dominate with smallmouth. So it's pretty diverse up there, even though it's all in general really the same area.
We got three. You got three elite stops. You got Cayuga Lake, 14th through the 17th of July. St. Lawrence, 23rd through 26th of July. Lake Champlain, 30th of July in August. And then you're fishing the open up there, Oneida Lake, August 6th through the 8th.
Yep, never been there before, so I'm kind of excited to go to that one. I don't think it's quite the lights out fishery that some of those other lakes you just mentioned are, but I think it's still a pretty good place, and it'll be a kind of nice. I mean, the opens are. I've had fun fishing those, so it'll be a nice tournament that's not quite as high pressure as the elites mixed in there. So,
will you have any time? I mean, is Oneida? I'm not sure how the opens run. Is it off limits while you're up there? Or will you get a chance to go in there before official practice?
It's not. It's not off limits, but I probably, with the schedule being so tight and me, I'm going to be so tired of fishing, honestly, after it. It may be a tournament that I just go practice a day or two far to kind of mix in there.
Okay.
And, take a little break in that swing there to get some time off and just practice a day or two for that one and fish the tournament.
Well, we're going deep into the fall, and this is a question I like to ask and talk about. With Chris Brown, and we all talked about this on Angler's Channel the other day. Fish in the fall, going deep into October. Mm-hmm. What do you think? You got about a minute and a half to give me your opinion on what you think October is going to be like at Santee, Chick, and all those.
Yeah, so I think the fish in all those lakes are really good fisheries, but I don't think you're going to see the weights you would have seen.
Okay.
But I think you'll get to see some styles of fishing. And probably some areas of the lake play that would never normally happen in regular season. And it'll be cool because it's going to be tougher. I mean, but I think it's going to be one of those tournaments where you're going to see real competitive weights because you're not going to see, I don't think anybody's going to be blowing it out and you're not going to see a bunch of 20 pound bags, but it'll be good fishing and kind of different than we've ever seen.
How much is it going to interfere with your deer season?
I don't deer much. Amy deer hunts more than I do, so
oh, gosh.
I'm not too concerned with it.
Oh, wow. Amy deer hunts more. We need to get Amy on this fall then. While Brandon's off fishing,
fine.
We get Amy on talking about deer hunting. And what it's like to put up with Brandon Cobb.
Is that really a can of worms we need to open right now?
I don't know. You tell me.
Maybe this will be the last time he'll be on our show. You better be careful.
Oh, man. No, we have had some great times on this show together. Great times on the show. Great times at tournaments. I mean, FLW tournaments, cups. It's it's an amazing journey to see you now in the Bassmaster Elites, and doing so well. And we and I don't think anybody would have said back when you were fishing in the Cup those first few years, he's got it. We'll see him on the big stage, and now you're on the big stage. It's really cool to see, Brandon. And you have represented South Carolina. What are you laughing about?
It's getting sloppy in here
it's
again.
I don't take time to tell him this enough. So
this is a bonding moment.
No, it's just being host. It's just me being host. But yeah. All right. So got a few weeks to spend just hanging around the house, and you're gonna hit up north and then back to South Carolina. And I say, Taylor, we need to catch up with him after the northern swing and see what's going on. And then
definitely.
Then we'll talk about it. We need to get Amy on. That'd be fun.
Yep.
Sounds good. We can do it. Okay. We can both go on one time.
both of them. There you go.
Yep. Oh, that would be fun.
We have talked about that before. Yep, talked about going to Brandon's house and doing a live from his house.
Oh.
Maybe we could take Sophie.
Oh, boy.
We could have two labs in your house. I'm sure you'd love that.
You have all kind of turmoil going on.
Oh, you would, wouldn't you? All right, Brandon Cobb, I appreciate you taking time and spending an extra segment with us today. We look forward to watching you up north, back in South Carolina, and catching you up here on the show. Thanks for doing this for me, and we'll talk to you later.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. We'll talk later.
All right. See you later, man.
Thank you. Bye.
Yep. And with that, folks, there's another show in the books.
Yep.
That was sloppy.
Soppy. Soppy. I didn't
I like
say
him.
Sloppy.
All right,
gracious.
Whatever. Hey, make time to get out there. Take the backwards you can. Don't forget the camera. Back next week. More Woods and Water, South Carolina.